The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Well, greetings, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Moore. Let's go over to Genesis 4 and put a ribbon in your Bible, if you will, because we'll keep going back there. Adam and Eve, of course, were kicked out of the Garden of Eden for sinning. What do you think the first thing they did after they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden? They raised Cain. The term raising Cain is still used today. It means causing trouble. It's engaging in unrestrained behavior, and it refers to bringing up that very same spirit, that is the spirit of Cain himself, bringing up pride, bringing up vanity, bringing up jealousy, anger, hatred, a desire to injure or hurt somebody else. And so I don't think we should kid ourselves. That spirit is the same spirit that came from the devil, and sometimes we feel it. Sometimes we feel that spirit in our life and our daily activities. And that spirit covers the world today, and tuning into it causes wicked practices. That's why we have corrupt politics today. That's why we have corporate backstabbing today. It's why we have gang wars and why we have national wars. And it's using our power in some kind of violent way to get our way. And that kind of use of power, wicked power, to get our way is growing. Consider in 2016, there were 17,250 violent killings in America. And that number is growing. And I couldn't even get the numbers for the latest years. But all this started with Cain about 6,000 years ago. It began with the story of how man's heart can be affected and can change his life. So in Genesis 4 and in verse 1 and 2, Genesis 4, and Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and she said, I've gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And so God explains the relationship between a man and a woman, what I think in a beautiful way. And he knew his wife. And today we have all kinds of crude ways, I think, of expressing the union between a man and a woman. But God's term, I think, is really a beautiful term if you think about it. It's an unfolding discovery that takes place, I believe, over a lifetime, and that's the way it should be. And Eve likely had daughters prior to having these boys, but she had gotten a man-child and called him Cain. And the name comes from the very same word that is actually lance. It is to strike fast, or it means a spear. And I think it's likely from this name that she thought that Cain might be the promised Messiah, and she may have hoped that he would be the one that would bruise Satan's head. But instead, she gave birth to a murderer. Cain was the firstborn. And you know, in those days, in the early days, and long through history, the firstborn was always thought to be a superior position. And so Cain likely thought of himself as being superior. And this is a truth I think all that should remember, and that is unrestrained ego nearly always leads to a conflict of some kind. And Ernest Hemingway made an interesting statement regarding this, and he said this: there's nothing noble in being superior to your fellow men. True nobility, he said, only lies in being superior to your former self. I think that is a very good statement. It's so true. Nothing more noble in being superior to another Thinking that we're superior to somebody else is the devil's game. That's exactly what he wants you to think, to divide and separate. Still, pride is the essence of human nature. It's in every single one of us. You know, in fact, it's been said it's a good thing that God made us the way that he did, because we can't pat ourselves on the back and we can't kick ourselves in the rear. Yeah. Benjamin Franklin wrote this in his autobiography: "There's perhaps no one of our natural passions so hard to subdue as pride. Beat it down, stifle it, mortify it as much as one pleases, it's still alive. Even if I could conceive that I had completely overcome it, I should probably be proud of my humility." It's so true, so true. Proverbs 16. Now I remember why it was that I decided to not turn. Not using my... Familiar scripture. Pride in verse 18. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. How true is that? Pride is what destroyed the devil. It's what drove Eve to distrust God. It created the ego that drove Nimrod to build a monument to himself. Ego molded the heart of King Saul. It's ego that caused the ruin of Cain. Back to Genesis 4. Have a room in there. And so it was that pride was the thing that instigated the very next sin of mankind's history. These two brothers had come before God to give their offering, and it's right here that sin would begin again. Think about this truth. When you and I take Passover each year, we wash feet first. And there's a reason, I believe, for that. And that is that we can't come and take a part of Christ's sacrifice for us without having humility first. You know, he died for us. He gave everything for us. He gave it up. And the beating that he took was not what mattered so much to him. The crucifixion that he went through was not the trial he went through. He says, or it says at least in Hebrews, he hated the shame of what he went through. The shame, of course, started when all the sins of humanity were put on him, because he was clean and pure and morally perfect. But that wasn't all of it. And I ask you to think about this, because he had a relationship with the Father. And when he talked to his disciples, he said, you're going to leave me and I'm going to be alone. But I'm not alone, because the Father's always with me. And when all those sins were put on him, he lost the only thing he really deeply cared about. And that was the relationship he had with the Father. He turned his back on Christ and he lost that, and that was the most horrible thing to him, the most horrible thing to lose. And he gave that up for us. And he gave that up for the Father and for the plan of God. And that is real humility. That is real love. So imagine the humility it took on his part to lose all that for us. To me, it is unimaginable. It's unable to be expressed, if you will, because it meant more than anything else to him except to please the Father, and he did it for him and for us. And so he could do that, though, because he was completely empty of personal pride. And so when we give our offering to God, I ask us, isn't it appropriate that we give it completely empty of pride? Yes. Yes. It's our enemy, and we don't see it that way because it's in us and it's a part of us. And so we don't often see it. And so I'm reminding us today of it being in us and being a part of us and being something that can steer us into sin, just like it did to Cain. So back to Genesis again, Genesis 4 and verse 3 and 4. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. So, before we continue, there's some unrelated, but I think important points to bring out here. You know, some commentaries will agree with the point I'm going to make here today. The King James Version and some other translations have verse 3 in the process of time, just like we read, in the process of time. But this is a terrible, terrible translation, especially in regard to the context here, because the example in the margin, even in the King James, in the margin, they'll put the more literal translation, and it says at the end of days. And Albert Barnes, in his commentary, writes, the season of the year was probably the ingathering when the fruits of the earth and the firstlings of the flocks would come in. Let's go for a minute over to Exodus 19. Exodus 19. And there in verse 6 and 7. Want to make a point here further. The only time that the offerings included animals and vegetables at the same time was Pentecost. Both Cain and Abel presented their offerings to God at the same time. That would have been Pentecost. The only time offerings were given after counting days is Pentecost. These two were now adults and at the age to keep the feasts of God. So further, it's likely that Adam acted as a high priest during God's feast, because prior to the golden calf, the heads of household actually served as priests. Remember, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, was a priest, and he sacrificed. And so it's important, I think, to at least have this in the back of our head. So God's original intent was not that only one family be priests. His original intent was that all of Israel, the heads of the families, would be priests. And so he says here in 19 and verse 6, and you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. And these are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. And so you see this, where all of the heads, all of the elders of the families were considered priests. And so you see again in Exodus 19, verse 22, Exodus 19, verse 22. So these are unrelated, but I think really important things to know. And let the priests, before there ever was any priesthood set up by the Levites, he said, let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. Okay, back to Genesis 4. Yeah. So it was after the golden calf incident that the Levites stood up for God, and it was then that he made the Levites the priestly line. And during the time of Cain, the head of family served in that position as priest. And so it was likely that Adam served as a priest in this case when they brought their offering. So these verses show from the beginning, mankind knew about the feasts of God. This is not something that was instituted centuries later. This was something that was known from the time of Adam forward, and they were observed from the beginning. And in this case, Abel's offering was accepted, but Cain's was not. In chapter 4 and verse 5, but unto Cain and to his offering God had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. So the scriptures state that God had respect for Cain, for Abel's offering, and the word respect means to gaze at, to inspect, to consider, to be nonplussed, as looking around in amazement or bewildered, regard or have respect. So you get the impression that God was really impressed with the offering that Abel gave. It wasn't just an ordinary offering, but it was something that would really impress. So let's go to Hebrews 11 for a minute. Hebrews 11. In other words, God was amazed at the offering it was given, but it wasn't just the size of the offering. It wasn't the kind of offering that impressed God. It was the best he had. And there was a reason why it was the best that he had. The reason was that he reverently loved God. He loved what God stood for, and he cared very deeply for the relationship that he had. And it was because of his belief that Abel was living a righteous life. And so in Hebrews 11 and verse 4, it says, by faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he being dead yet speaks. In other words, listen, he's still speaking by his example to us today. In other words, we go to the feasts and we give offerings, and sometimes those offerings are accepted by God and sometimes they're not. Well, what's going to make the difference? The difference is going to be our relationship with God through the year. How much do we care about him? What's our relationship with him like? That's what's going to matter, and our offering is going to generally reflect that. It's not going to be just something we do because God says to do it, so we're going to do it. It's done with passion. It's done with love in our heart and a desire to show that love to God. 1 John 3, Abel's offering still speaks to us, and it's a vital message. You know, Abel had faith that God was inherently good. He had faith that he was going to save us as humankind. He had faith that God would deliver us. And Cain's offering, I believe, was inferior. And today you'll read all kinds of commentaries that will say this. They'll say Cain's offering was only vegetables and Abel's offering was sheep, and that the sheep represented Christ, and that's why it was accepted. None of that is true, and none of it's true with us. Just like, remember the widow that gave the very small offering? But Christ pointed that small offering out. Why? Because she gave all she could, because her heart was in it. And it's the same with this offering here. And it's the same with our offerings that we give. That's what matters. And that's what mattered then, and that's what mattered to that widow, and that's what matters to us, that our offerings have to be given in respect and love for God. And so he didn't reject Cain's offering because it wasn't the right kind. And he didn't reject it because it wasn't big enough. He rejected it because of the nature of the man who gave it. Notice the words of the Apostle John in 1 John 3. For this is the gospel message that you've heard from the beginning, he says in verse 11 and 12, that we should love one another, not like Cain, who was of the evil one, and brutally murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his deeds were evil, but his brothers were righteous. This is the difference. What are our deeds like as we go through our walk every day. What are our deeds like, and what are our thoughts like, and what is our nature like? You understand? That's what matters to God. And so every day, in one sense, we give an offering. Every day in our actions and our thoughts and how we treat each other is an offering. And it's from that, when we give our offering, whether it's accepted or not. So there was a moral difference in the minds of these two men. The offerings express a kind of faith that they had. Their offerings were an outward exhibition, if you will, of an inward conviction. And that's what was going on here. And it reminds me of a story I read that came out of Reader's Digest, where all great stories come from, of course. Okay? It was the Butterball Turkey Company set up a telephone hotline to answer consumer questions about preparing holiday turkeys. And one woman called to inquire about cooking a turkey that had been in the bottom of her freezer for 23 years. That's right, 23 years. The Butterball representative told her the turkey would probably be safe to eat if the freezer had been kept below zero for the entire 23 years. But the Butterball representative warned her that even if the turkey was safe to eat, the flavor would probably have deteriorated to such a degree that she would not recommend eating it. And the caller replied, "That's what I thought. We'll give the turkey to the church." We laughed. You think that doesn't happen in the offerings that we give to God sometimes? We don't give him the best? Cain's offering was rejected because of his value of God. Abel's offering was given in faith and hope and in respect for the Almighty God. And it was given with an understanding of our nature that it is to sin. And so it was offered with a sense of enormous gratitude for God's mercy. And it was offered in submission to God's will, with a sincere desire to obey God. And it wasn't just what was left over or what was laying around, that kind of thing. So Charles Kuralt said this at one time: there's a lot of people who are doing wonderful things. They're doing them quietly with no motive of greed. They have no delusions of superiority. And that's the kind of man Abel was. That's the kind of man, and that's the kind of women that you and I need to be. Just normal people going about trying to do our best out of a pure heart and a love for God. And that should be our motive. And that wasn't Cain's. There's a difference. So 1 Corinthians 4. Cain didn't really understand God. He didn't love who and what God was. He didn't love the values that God stands for. And so the fact that God didn't accept his offering was an offense to him. What if God didn't accept our offering? How would we feel? Well, we might feel hurt a little bit, right? But wouldn't it be a motive to change? Wouldn't it be a wake-up call? We wouldn't be angry and so hurt that we want to strike out or we want to reject God. We've got to have that mindset. There's nothing wrong with losing if we learn from losing. There's nothing wrong from a spanking if we learn from the spanking. Or if we learn from loss of privileges or whatever it is that hits us in life, if we don't get the raise at work, if we don't get the recognition we think we deserve, that tells us that we're not doing something right and we need to correct it. And so that's a great lesson in life, really, an enormous truth in life. The superior person will accept blame for their failures. The inferior person will always tend to blame others. And you've seen it over and over in life, haven't you? What we don't want to do is we don't want to be a part of that. And that's the important thing to us. The truth is this, comparison among ourselves, even that is in its own way an act of violence. And that's why Paul says this in 1 Corinthians 4, verse 3 and 4. But with me, it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you, he says, or of man's judgment. Yes, I judge not my own self, for I know nothing by myself, yet I am not hereby justified, but he that judges me is the Lord. And so we're going around so many times in life judging one another and judging ourselves by looking at others, the way they dress, the way they act. All that's important, you know. And you know what? You watch TV a lot, and we're judging ourselves by how the TV actors are, how they dress and how they look and what their hair looks like. We're always making these comparisons, judging ourselves by others. Why? Why? So we can buy their stuff. You know, it's all set up to use this attitude that's in us of wanting to be approved of and wanting acceptance. This is the spirit that got Cain going. It's the same spirit that's in every one of us. We want acceptance. We want that from everybody else. And it's in every one of us, and we've got to be careful about it. It's a typical trait of humans. Do you want to raise Cain? You want to? All we need to do is be corrected. All you need is to feel rejected, and you'll raise Cain. You will. Those feelings will come in. Resentment. Anger. You know, that's the case when we first feel, generally, is anger. When Cain felt rejected, he was livid. He was angry. And then later, it turned to something else, though. It turned to hatred. And God asked him, hey, look inside. Hey, Cain, look inside. What's the motive here? What's going on? In Genesis 4 again, Genesis 4 and 6 and 7. And the Lord said unto Cain, why are you angry? Why are you wroth? And why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, shall you not be accepted? And if you don't do well, sin lies at the door. And unto you shall be his desire, and you shall rule over him. And so this is a really, really valuable point. God's telling him, here's your chance to change things. Here's your chance to do well. It's normal to be angry, isn't it? But you can be angry and sin not. You don't have to sin. You don't have to sin. But anger towards another person presents a door that if you open it, there's a whole different dimension on the other side of it. Behind that door of anger does lie sin. You open that door, and here's what you're going to meet. Envy, jealousy, self-righteousness, covetousness, and the covetousness of the devil. You understand my point? We can be angry, and there's a door that we can open. And on the other side of that is where we don't want to go. And that's what God is telling him. Don't go any further with this, because it's going to turn to anger, and hatred is what's going to be on the other side. And so the emotions are varied of hate. Spirit of murder is always there. In the end of it, you know, Genesis 4:8, and Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field, Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. So you remember the stories we read of Saul. You remember what happened? That every time David would come into a town, well, the girls would dance, and they'd sing a song about, well, Saul killed his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And then when he heard about that, what did he do? He started to eye David. He started to eye him. You know what you eye? When you aim a gun. That time he had a javelin in his hand, and he threw it at him. At that very time, he did the same thing. He was going to murder David because of jealousy. Same thing as Cain and Abel. And it's the same thing that happens at work. Somebody's better than you, You know, do something to get rid of them. It happens over and over. It happens in the ladies' club. They used to have ladies' clubs like Spokesman clubs, and the ladies would rip and tear at each other in the evaluation section, you know. And it happens all the time. I've seen this happen repeatedly in the Church of God. My point is, have you ever opened the door? I would say yes. I think everybody's opened the door a little bit sometime in their life. You know, have you ever envied someone, been jealous of someone? Because I think it's happened to all of us at one time or another. But I want us today to see how dangerous it is, because it's part of human nature, and so all of us have it. We all have that nature. We all want to be thought well of. And so the first thing we need to do is, if our pride is threatened, if our position is threatened, if our reputation is threatened, when anything about us is threatened, the defense mechanism is engaged. Just like putting your transmission in first gear. We feel resentment, we feel jealousy, we feel envious, we feel spiteful, and sometimes malicious. We naturally want to protect ourselves, and so often we think the way to do it is to strike back, to hurt others. May not want to kill the person. We may not want to do physical damage to anyone. But I did see it once from a deacon in the parking lot. I've seen it go that far in the very Church of God. You want to fight? You know, whose way are we going to get? You know, I've seen it go that far. So it does, and it can, and it does happen on all kinds of levels. And so because we're called of God, we've got to consider it as a part of our nature that we need to control, and realize that it's possible for us to raise Cain in all of us. So I want us to admit that the potential exists for us to become envious, to become jealous. So I would ask us to look back over our past, see if it's presented itself in any way. Make a commitment today to not let it happen to us in the future, to make sure we have a handle on this, and that we take God's advice and that we keep it in check. Yes, it can happen. We might get angry, but we don't have to sin. We don't have to open the other door. We can keep it locked and it'll go away. Because if we don't see it, if we think that we're without it, we could be overcome by it. That's my point. We could be overcome by it, because I've seen it happen to other people. Genesis 4, verse 9, and the Lord said unto Cain, where is Abel your brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? So Cain answers God, am I my brother's keeper? One sense, I think he's right. We're not responsible for every other single human being on the face of the earth. But on the other hand, don't we bear a responsibility to other human beings? I mean, we all came from God. We are all brothers and sisters. So it does, to me, mean that we don't support every freeloader in life. You understand? You get the point that there are people that will, you know, try to use you. We don't have to be used by other people, but I mean, even the six commandments, don't the six commandments make sure that we are our brother's keeper, so that we don't murder them, so that we don't steal from them, so that we treat them right, and so that we don't covet what they have? All of those things are to protect our brother. And so God expects us to protect our brother, and he gives us other things as well, that if somebody, if we're forced to support someone, then he says that they're to indenture themselves to us, and they're to work for us if we support them. So that's something they should think about today when all these people want to come into the United States, all these immigrants want to come in, they want to be supported, they need to get to work, get to work. That's what they need to do. And if you're somebody's brother's dies, then the youngest, I think, marries the the wife and takes care of her, because we do take care of our brother. We do take care of him. And I think that shows in God's law. So to me, God's law throughout shows the whole concept of loving God and loving your brother and taking care of others. And I think the example of who is my neighbor? Who's my neighbor? And he goes through and gives that example. And I think that's the best case condition of all, that if we have that attitude of even a stranger taking and helping them out. And I think a number of people have done that in their lives, where they have helped a stranger who is in need and been hurt, something like that. The example of Christ dying for us. Is that helping your neighbor? Yeah, of course it is. So we are to care for others, forgiving those who hurt us upon true repentance, helping, that's loving your neighbor. There's so many examples in the Bible about this, you know. James 1, it's our responsibility, as God writes of it in the scriptures. James 1, verse 14, but each one of us is tempted when we're lured and enticed by our own desires. Then when the desire conceives, it gives birth to sin. And when the sin is full grown, it gives birth to death. That's what he's talking about here. That's what happened to Cain. That was the example there. Genesis 4 again. Genesis 4. Verse 10 and 11. And he said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries unto me from the ground. And now are you cursed from the earth, which has opened her mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it's not going to yield unto you its strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shall you be in the earth. And in 2 Thessalonians 1:9, he cuts Cain off from access to him any longer. And to me, this is the ultimate fate of all sinners. They shall be punished, he says, with everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power. Back to Genesis 4. Verse 13 through 15. And Cain said unto the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you've driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from the face I shall be hid from your face, and I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth, and it shall come to pass that every one that finds me shall slay me. And so, what's his concern? Himself again, same thing. So now he's got to live among strangers. So that shows that, you know, over time, I think there may have been other people already in existence, but remember, these people lived a long time, and there would be generations that would come up, and they would very likely, if you remember, it wasn't long, I think in Genesis 6, he says, whoever slays blood shall be slain. And so, it wouldn't be long, and he knew that this would be the case, that they would slay him. But God extends him mercy in verse 16. Verse 15, the Lord said unto them, therefore, whoever slays Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. And Cain thought his punishment too severe, and he felt he'd be killed, and so God put a mark on him. And over the centuries, of course, people have all postulated what they think that mark is, and they think it's some think it was God's name on his forehead, some think it was a cross on his forehead, some people think it was the color of his skin, some think it's a tattoo, and you read this in commentaries, I'm not kidding. But I want to make my own postulation. As long as they're going to do it, I'm going to do it too. But I want to argue what I think it is. The word is oath. It's used when it says the Sabbath is a sign. It's the same word. You know, when it says that if you keep God's commandments, in chapter 5 of Deuteronomy, in chapter 6, it says it's a sign you wear in your right hand and your forehead. Same exact word. So what we're talking about is an invisible sign. Remember the 144,000? They have a sign put in their forehead. Remember in Ezekiel where the angel goes through and he puts a sign on everybody's head that obeys God? And then he says, go through and kill everyone that doesn't have the mark on their forehead. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not a visible sign, but it's a sign that the angel will protect the person who has the mark. It's in all likelihood an invisible sign that only the angels can see. So anyway, that's an opinion of art. Okay. But my message today, I don't think, is an opinion. There is that same spirit of Cain that lives inside our flesh. We are hurt when we're not the chosen one. Remember on the ball team, they choose, the captains would choose the best, next best guy, and the next best guy, next. You're the last one. I've been there. You know. Anyway, it hurts. You know, we are hurt when others do better. We're hurt when others are better. We're hurt when others receive more. And it can lead to a sense of anger. We feel it, but we must not hold on to it. That's the point today. Twice in the Bible, the religious leaders attacked Christ and they had him killed. And you know what it says the reason was they did it? For envy. For envy, that's why they did it. And we can be like that in our own social circles. We can be like that at work. We can be like that in the church. And I remember a guy once, they ordained a man who just highly deserved it. He was a wonderful man. And I remember another man was sullen and angry because it wasn't him. And he was mad, and he had to have a crowd of guys around him cooling him off. It happens. It's in us, and we've got to be careful. And so my point is, Christ's blood also cries to us from the ground. It's crying to us today, and it's vitally important for us living now. Don't hate those who may have hurt us. Don't hate them. Don't let the spirit of Cain rise up. Don't open that door. Don't let resentment, envy, or jealousy, or hatred enter. It will almost always end up in us hurting someone else. So remember the story of Cain, and don't let the spirit of Cain be in us.